So before we start our readings, we'd like to say the prayers to the acharyas, and you have the Bhagavad Gita in front of you, and you turn to the introduction on page 1 and say the prayers. Om Yagnana Timarandasya. We'll say all together. Om Yagnana Timarandasya Gnananjana Salakaya Chakshur Anmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishankha Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhuba Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Let's turn to the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and we are going to start with the 8th verse, that is the 8th text, I believe. It's on page 456 of the Bhagavad Gita, and that is the Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo verse. So I'll recite it and you can chant after me. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matha Sarvam Pravartate Iti Matva Bhajante Mam Buddha Bhava Samanvita. Aham, I, Sarvasya, of all, Prabhava, the source of generation, Matha, from me, Sarvam, everything, Pravartate, emanates, Iti, thus, Matva, knowing, Bhajante, become devoted, Mam, unto me, Buddha, the learned, Bhava, Samanvita, with great attention. Translation. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Please repeat after me. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Now I thought what we can do is read a paragraph each. We'll go round in rotation, and there's a microphone that if you'd like to start, you can start from there and we'll come this way. One paragraph, yes.
A learned scholar who has studied the Vedas perfectly has information from authorities like Lord Chaitanya, and who knows how to apply these teachings can understand that Krishna is the origin of everything in both the material and spiritual worlds. And because he knows this perfectly, he becomes firmly fixed in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. He can never be deviated by any amount of nonsensical commentaries or by fools. All Vedic literature agrees that Krishna is the source of Brahma, Shiva, and all other demigods. In the Atharva Veda, it is said, Yo Brahmanam Vidadhati Purvam Yo Vai Vedamscha Gopayati Sma Krishnaha. It was Krishna who in the beginning instructed Brahma in Vedic knowledge and who disseminated Vedic knowledge in the past. Then again the Narayan Upanishad says, Atha Purushoha Vai Narayano Kamayata Prajaha Shrejayeti. Then the Supreme Personality Narayana desired to create living entities. The Upanishad continues, Narayanad Brahma Jayate, Narayanad Prajapatihi Prajayate, Narayanad Indro Jayate, Narayanad Astau Vasavo Jayante, Narayanad Ekadasha Rudra Jayante, Narayanad Dvadasadityaha. From Narayan, Brahma is born, and from Narayan, the patriarchs are also born. From Narayana, Indra is born. From Narayana, the 8 Vasus are born. From Narayana, the 11 Rudras are born. From Narayana, the 12 Adityas are born. This Narayana is an expansion of Krishna.
Second paragraph on page 457.
It is said in the same Vedas, the son of Devaki, Krishna, is the Supreme Personality. Narayana Upanishad. This is said, in the beginning of the creation, there was only the Supreme Personality, Narayana. There was no Brahma, no Shiva, no water, no fire, no moon, no stars in the sky, no sun. Maha Upanishad. In the Maha Upanishad, it is also said that the Lord Shiva was born from the forehead of the Supreme Lord. Thus, the Vedas say that it is the Supreme Lord, the creator of Brahma and Shiva, who is to be worshipped.
In the Moksha Dharma, Krishna also said, Prajapatim cha rudram chapi aham eva srijami vai tuhi mam na vajjantito mama maya vimothito. The Prajatis, Shiva and others are created by me, though they do not know that they are the created by me. They are created by me because they are deluded by my illusionary energy. In the Akraha Purana, it is also said, Narayana Paro Deva Tasmaj Jatas Chaturmukha Tasmat Rudro Bhava Deva Sacha Sarva Itam Katha. Narayana is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and from him Brahma was born, from whom Shiva was born.
Hare Guru Prabhu.
Lord Krishna is the source of all generations, and he is called the most efficient cause of everything. He says, because everything is born of me, I am the original source of all. Everything is under me, no one is above me. There is no supreme controller other than Krishna. One who understands Krishna in such a way from a bona fide spiritual master with references from Vedic literature engages all his energy in Krishna consciousness and becomes a truly learned man. In comparison to him, all others who do not know Krishna properly are but fools. Only a fool would consider Krishna to be an ordinary man. A Krishna conscious person should not be bewildered by fools. He should avoid all unauthorized commentaries and interpretations on Bhagavad Gita and proceed in Krishna consciousness with determination and firmness.
So this is a very important verse from the Bhagavad Gita. This is the verse that identifies Krishna to be the source of everything. As the verse itself says, and the Bhagavad Gita is also unique in that if you look at other literatures like the Bible and the Quran, you don't find there the speakers, those who have given the word of God, that they are the source of everything or that they are unequal to anyone else. In the Bible, for example, Jesus Christ refers to his father and he says that it's my father who is the Lord in heaven. And in the Quran, when Muhammad spoke about it, he referred to Allah the God. And when they pray, when they do their namaz, they all bow down and are praying to Allah. Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita, is the only Supreme Personality of Godhead who has clearly come out and said what his identity is and what who is. In fact, the verse starts by saying, I am the source of all spiritual and material world. Everything emanates from me. You had a question?
I just had a question regarding the content of Bible and Quran. I'm not sure if, like in Bhagavad Gita, it's Krishna who is speaking. Of course, it's been recorded by Vyasadeva, but how about in Bible and Quran? Who are the speakers there?
The speakers are the disciples, and they are disciples of Christ. In the Bible, there are some 11 personalities, among them Paul and others, who are giving the narrations. And they are talking about the word of Christ, but even the word of Christ refers to his father. He says, I am bringing the message from my Father. So we are left to the Lord in heaven, whom we have yet to hear what he has to say. The Son, of course, is giving the message. And this has been pointed out by Acharyas in our line that the Bhagavad Gita is very unique in that Krishna comes out and says who he is. Yes.
It's not from the
I don't know if it is good to mention it here, but...
The book of creation.
There is a creator. Yes. There is a creator identify himself as I. I am the light, I am the way, I am the truth. And that is something the disciples and Jesus calling the Father, the Creator, the Heavenly Father.
Yes.
So, you know, there is a Father they are mentioning in the beginning, in the Old Testament, Genesis, and, you know, the generation starting from that, you know. Even from the before the beginning of the earth, the Creator who the earth and all that stuff isn't there too.
Yes, yeah. But in the Bible, as we proceed further, it is the word of Christ, the message of Christ, that refers to his Father. And of course, Christ refers to Genesis, and Genesis is all about creation. That is a good point. If you see what has been mentioned in Genesis, you will see there are a lot of parallels between what Krishna is saying here about the source of creation, and also the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which talks about the various incarnations of the Lord, has a lot of parallels to Genesis. So yes, that point is there, that the original source they point out is in the Genesis, which is the Father. But the predominant message that is there in the Bible is the message that the Son is carrying of the Father. The distinction that is being suggested here is that in the Bhagavad Gita, throughout Krishna is talking. So he says that I am the source of all spiritual and material world. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So Krishna is the source of everything. He is the source of this material manifestation, the universe, as well as he is the source of the living entities. In the 15th chapter, Krishna says that these living entities are my parts and parcel. They are struggling in the material world with the sixth sense, which is the mind. In the Brahma Samhita, when it refers to Ishvara Krishna, Satchitananda Vigraha Anadi Adi Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam, it is saying that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Sri Krishna, who is unequaled, not equaled by anybody. There is nobody greater than him. There is nobody superior to him. He is the one from whom everything is emanating, the cosmic manifestation, the living entities, as well as from his internal potency are coming the incarnations, the expansions of the Lord. As the Srimad Bhagavatam says, that all the incarnations that are there, including Narayan, come from the internal potency of the Lord. So Krishna is the source of everything. Now, in this verse, it points out that the wise know about this. Those who are the Mahatmas, the Acharya, they know. And so what is their response? They are engaged in devotional service. They are bowing down to the Lord. They are offering their obeisances. And they are engaged in devotional service all the time, 24 hours a day, the Acharyas, thinking about Krishna. And they worship him with all his hearts. These are the Mahatmas and their devotees. But at the same time, here in the purport, it refers to that one may find people who don't know Krishna, who deride Krishna. They are on the ignorant platform. They have not yet come to knowledge about the Supreme Personality. There are other materialists, for example, who in trying to understand the Lord embark on the path of Jnana Yoga and enter into speculative knowledge in order to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But it says in the 7th chapter that even these Jnanis who are in the path of knowledge ultimately their perfection will lie when that Gnan gets converted to Bhakti. The famous verse in the seventh chapter, which is Bahunam Janmanam Gnante, Gnanavan Mam Prapadyante, Vasudev Sarvam Iti, Mahatma Sudurlaba. It says, after many, many births, he who is in knowledge finally comes to the realization that Vasudev is everything. And so what is his response? He surrenders. He surrenders because he comes to the realization that Vasudev is the supreme personality of Godhead. Such a soul is very rare. In fact, it says Mahatma Sudurlaba. It equates him with a Mahatma. Just like the Mahatmas are referred to here in this verse as those who know that Krishna is the source of everything. What are they doing? They are engaged in his devotional service. They are in bhakti. They are not in the mode of speculative knowledge or jnana yoga. Similarly, a person on the path of jnana yoga, when he finally comes to the perfect realization, he surrenders to the Supreme Lord. So in the purport here, various evidences are offered. First, it points out that the Vedas say that the goal of the Vedas is understanding Krishna. The final goal of the Vedas is not to be doing these karma kanda activities that would lead one to heaven. Many people get distracted and engage in karma kanda activities and in the hopes of finding greater level of sense gratification, which is possible. But it is said that that is only a system of regulation that has been given in the Vedas for people who have not yet come on the path of devotional service. It is not really meant to be an end goal in itself. But often people take that as an end goal in order to go to heaven, and they will finally go to heaven after all their pious credits are exhausted. They fall back in the material world and they have to start all over again. So the ultimate goal of the Vedas is also to understand Krishna. And when one embarks on that path, then one would come to the perfect realization. Then it also talks about the Narayana Upanishad. And we read through that purport where it gives further evidences that the Supreme Personality, Narayan, desired to create living entities. All these living entities, such as Brahma, Shiva, and others, emanated them from them. But Narayan himself is the expansion of Krishna, that everything is coming from the Lord. The Lord Krishna is the source of all generations, and he is called the most efficient cause of everything. He is the cause of all causes, and the source of everything that is there in the universe. So, an important quotation here is, because everything is born of me, I am the original source of all. Everything is under me, no one is above me. That validates the message of this important verse. Were there any other points on this or anything else to discuss? Okay, we can move on to the second verse. What we are doing is we are going through a set of verses that Pushta Krishna Prabhu had selected. He was to be here, but he has been delayed. So we are reading through those. There's a collection of them. We did 10.8, now we are going to do 10.9. That's on page 458. Mat chita mad gata prana bodhayanta parasparam kathayantascha mam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Recite after me. Machata mad gata prana bodhayanta parasparam Kathayantascha mam nityam. Tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Machita. Their minds fully engaged in me. Mat gata prana. Their lives devoted to me. Bodhayanta. Preaching. Parasparam. Among themselves. Kathayanta. Talking. Cha. Also. Mam. About me. Nityam. Perpetually. Tushyanti. Become pleased. Cha. Also. Ramanti. Enjoy transcendental bliss. Cha. Also. Translation. The thought of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Please repeat. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. So let's do it as we did before. We'll have each devotee read a paragraph for this purport. And we can start with, yes.
The pure devotee who is characterized as mentioned here engage themselves fully in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Their mind cannot be derived from the lotus feet of Krishna. Their thoughts are solely on the transcendental subjects. The symptoms of this pure devotee are described in the verse of specifically, in this verse specifically. Devotees of Supreme Lord are 24 hours daily engaged in the glorifying in the qualities of the pastime of the Supreme Lord. Their hearts and souls are constantly submerged in Krishna and they are taking pleasure in discussing Him with other devotees.
We are on page 458 of the Bhagavad Gita that you have in front of you. This is chapter 10, text 9. Second paragraph. Go ahead.
In the preliminary stage of devotional service, they relish the transcendental pleasure from the service itself. In the mature stage, they are actually situated in the love of God. Once situated in the transcendental position, they can relish the highest perfection, which is exhibition by the Lord and His abode. Lord Chaitanya likens transcendental devotional service to the sowing of a seed in the heart of the living entity. There are innumerable living entities traveling throughout the different planets of the universe. And out of them, there are a few who are fortunate enough to meet a pure devotee and get the chance to understand the devotional service. This devotional service is like a seed. And if it is sown in the heart of a living entity, and if he goes on hearing and chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Hare, Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. That seed fructifies just as the seed of a tree fructifies with regular watering. The spiritual plant of devotional service gradually grows and grows until it permeates the covering of the material universe and enters into the Brahma Jyoti, effulgence in the spiritual sky. In the spiritual sky also, the plant grows more and more until it reaches the highest planet, which is called Goloka Vrindavan, the supreme planet of Krishna. Ultimately, the plant takes shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna and rests there. Gradually, as a plant grows fruit and the watering process in the form of chanting and hearing goes on, this plant of devotional service is fully described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 19. It is explained there that when the complete plant takes shelter under the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, one becomes fully absorbed in the love of God, then he cannot live even for a moment without being in contact with the Supreme Lord. Just as a fish cannot live without water, in such a state the devotee actually attains the transcendental qualities in contact with the Supreme Lord.
You can pass on the mic. We are in the last verse on last paragraph on page 459.
Okay. The Srimad Bhagavatam is also full of such narrations about the relationship between the Supreme Lord and his devotees. Therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam is very dear to the devotees, as stated in the Bhagavatam itself, 12, 13, 18. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. In this narration, there is nothing about material activities, economic development, sense gratification, or liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam is the only narration in which the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord and his devotees is fully described. Thus, the realized souls in Krishna consciousness take continual pleasure in hearing such transcendental literature, such just as a young boy and girl take pleasure in association.
Thank you. So in this verse, the characteristics of the devotees are mentioned here. That these devotees, Krishna says, they dwell in me, they live in me. Their thoughts are in Krishna and they are living in Krishna. And their lives are fully devoted to Krishna through service, through devotional service. Various forms of devotional service that they do. Here, for example, at the temple, we know that can take various activities. Devotees, of course, in addition to worshipping the Lord, bowing down to him and offering him worship, offering him flowers and considering him to be their best friend and also surrendering to him. In addition to that, also carry out other activities that supports Krishna's message. They are involved in spreading the message of Krishna consciousness through, for example, book distribution and prasadam distribution. They help out in various activities here at the temple, raise funds for a new temple for Krishna, as well as do other things that supports ISKCON of Silicon Valley here, whose goal is to give mercy to all living entities who are in darkness, conditioned souls who may not know this knowledge or this message that the Lord has for them for liberation, to promote and spread their message. So service takes various forms. And it also says that the devotees derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another. So here it is emphasizing association. That association among devotees is very vital. Devotees assemble here at the temple at programs that are held three times a week, and they enlighten each other. They share the knowledge, what they have learned, or their understanding of the Bhagavad Gita. They share it with the other devotees during comments and program talks, thereby enlightening other devotees, and in the process being satisfied as well as providing great satisfaction to those who hear that. For us, we are very blessed with our leader, our president, Vaisheshika Prabhu, who presently is in Vrindavan, very blessed with his preaching. When he is here, he is giving the talks from the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam three times a week. And we are hearing the message from the lips of a pure devotee. And it is said that when you are in this association and when you hear the message from the lips of a pure devotee, that message has the impact of penetrating your heart and it can remove all impurities that are there just by the process of hearing. That is also part of devotional service. We also participate in chanting the name of the Lord. We do that here in a congregational setting, as well as we do it in public performances. For example, when we have a Harinam performance once a month as part of our Sankirtan festival, we are chanting the holy name in public and sending out the sound vibration to conditioned souls out there who benefit just by hearing the Maha Mantra. This is another type of activity that devotees engage in, enlightening others, pleasing others, and deriving satisfaction and bliss from that process. And additionally, it says, and also they derive satisfaction and bliss in conversing about Krishna. At these programs and at the lectures and talks, we talk about Krishna's Leela as it is described in the 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We also talk about the various activities that Krishna performed when he himself came with his associates in Vrindavan. And this is a great time of the year to talk about. It's the month of Kartik. Many of our devotees are visiting right now Vrindavan and will be doing their vrat in Vrindavan. So conversing about Krishna is what devotees do and derive satisfaction and bliss from the process. So it says here in the purport that this process of devotional service, which first starts at a very preliminary stage, has been compared to the growth of a seedling. That when you plant a seedling, and you may sometimes see that behind your garage or behind some part in your garden, you may suddenly see that a plant sprouts out. And as you notice, that it directs itself towards the light, towards sunshine, and if properly watered and properly nurtured, it will grow. And the way it is heading towards the sky. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to say that the way bhakti or devotional service develops is the growth of a seedling. That as the seedling grows, it gets bigger and bigger, taller and taller. And it finally will reach the sky and it will break that curtain that is there in order to reach to the platform of what is called Brahma Jyoti. Brahma Jyoti is that region above the sky where one can, in fact, have experience this effulgence, the light that is coming from the body of Krishna. Now, experiencing this Brahma Jyoti or coming to the Brahma Bhuta platform is only the first stage in the process of devotional service. Often we hear in other interpretations such as the Mayavadis of Banaras where the ultimate goal is just to realize the Brahma Bhuta platform or experience Brahma Jyoti. But in our Gaudiya Vaishnavism, it has been described that this is not a complete or a perfect stage of spiritual advancement. It is only the beginning. The Brahma Bhuta platform is one where one is now transcending the three modes of material nature and coming to a platform. It is contact with the light of Krishna, but the ultimate goal is to know the source from whom everything is coming. The ultimate goal is to engage in a relationship with the Lord, devotional service, where one then is offering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. That is the personal aspect of devotional service. The Brahma Jyoti experience is only an impersonal aspect or impersonal Brahman, where one has made contact, but one has made contact only with the light coming from the body of Krishna. The real goal is to understand the Supreme Personality from whom the light is coming. So this seedling that is growing and heading towards the sky, ultimately will reach its destination when it is nurtured and watered with devotional service. That bhakti or devotional service, which is described as a 9-part process by Prahlad Maharaj, will ultimately lead one to the stage of perfection, lead one beyond Brahma Jyoti, beyond this effulgence in the spiritual sky, to the spiritual world where Krishna is, Goloka Vrindavan. And that can be nurtured through a 9-part process wherein which one is hearing about the Lord, one is chanting His name, one is remembering Him, one is offering obeisances to the Lord, one is surrendering to the Lord, one is considering the Lord as one's best friend, and one is worshiping the Lord. That process of bhakti will eventually lead to spiritual perfection. So on this verse, were there any questions or comments?
Since you're talking about impersonalism, and I believe like Islam is also impersonalist, is the impersonalism in the Hindu philosophy and Islam also are similar?
Well, that's a good question. When we say the impersonalism that we are talking about in Hindu philosophy is essentially the Mayavadi philosophy of Brahman realization. And what that is when in a particular path, or call it philosophy, the goal is to realize the Brahma Jyoti and stop there. That is to merge with it. The impersonal aspect comes in. Because what is implied is that all that one has to do is experience Brahma Jyoti and that will be it. That the end goal is all that. So one has not yet made contact with the personality of Godhead, the person from whom this Brahma Jyoti is coming. You are ending your search or your journey at the platform of realizing Brahman effulgence. How that compares to Islam, whether there is a one-to-one analogy, I'm not exactly certain, because in Islam, they consider their Lord to be Allah. He's the Lord. When they are doing their namaz, they are bowing down to Him and they are praying to Him. What their concept of Allah is, if the concept of Allah is something like Brahma Jyoti, then it would be impersonal. But if the concept of Allah is that Allah is a person at the end of it, even though one doesn't know all His features or His form, like the way Krishna is described in the Bhagavad Gita, that I exist in all my 6 opulences and we know everything about Him, we don't know that about Allah. But if Allah is deemed to be a person, then I would say that it would be different from this impersonal Brahman realization. Because in impersonal Brahman realization, there is no doubt that the goal is to merge in Brahma Jyoti. And we know that Brahma Jyoti is just the effulgence from the body of Krishna and not Krishna.
Yeah. Please, we should have a microphone there that you can use.
This is very important subject matter. Our Gurudev Srila Prabhupada is known Nivishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatari. And his Guru Maharaj as well, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, preached very vehemently to contrast, distinguish Vaishnava philosophy from impersonal philosophy. So basically, in this material world, no one knows God, and you cannot know God by your own separate endeavor. If you're trying to become spiritually realized by your own separate endeavor, be that even the name of a religious prophet, even in the name of God, you cannot realize God personally. He reserves that right to be known by His own discretion. There's so many verses, Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktya Twanyana Shakya, 18th chapter. So many verses, Krishna. I can only know by bhakti. So what is bhakti? How do we get this bhakti? So that's explained in Padma Purana. And this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives this verse in Jiva Dharma. Bhaktistu bhagavad bhakta sangena parijayate satsanga prapite pumbi sukritai purava sanchita. By previous association with saints who actually have some God realization, inspiration of God, personal bhakti sukriti. But and this is explained also in Harinam Chitamani. By the accumulation of bhakti sukritis, gradually bhakti becomes more and more awakened in the heart. So sadhana bhakti, the whole process, one sadhu explained, is simply a matter of accumulating bhakti sukritis. Sadhana bhakti, just more impressions. And I heard this even from Harsha, thank you. I know him by his other name, his last name. And he was from Prabhupada also, explained that by association with saints, by sadhu, sangha, by doing sadhana bhakti, you get these bhakti sukritis, and then Krishna reveals himself, not otherwise. So every religion is basically, we're all impersonal. And only by God's grace, by the grace of the Vaishnavas, who are knowing God, have in the contact, the line of God, can Krishna be known. So every religion, to some degree, has some personalness in it, and impersonalism. Even in Buddhism, you can find personalism, and you can find impersonalism in Vaishnava line. Prabhupada says you can be initiated by a bona fide acharya and be influenced by Mayavadi philosophy. And what is the prime example of that? Ramachandra Puri. He was disciple of Madhavendra Puri, and he became a disciple. It's our good fortune to associate with bona fide Vaishnavas. Then the bhakti comes in our hearts. Then Krishna can be known as personal. So otherwise, all endeavors to know God are limited to being personal. So we're very fortunate in the line of Mahaprabhu, who is giving himself, making himself known so freely through his holy name, and which is received, we should always know, through the Vaishnavas. Holy name is not to be, this is cut off from the Vaishnavas. There's some camps, they like to cut this, oh, Krishna Mahaprabhu is there, Krishna name is there, you can just chant, you don't need guru. This is bogus. Lots we should know.
Thank you very much for the comment, and I would like to add that in the Bhagavad Gita also we have very important verses in the 11th chapter and also in the 18th chapter where it is stated that Krishna can be understood only by devotional service. And we talked about earlier that the path of Jnana Yoga, the path of Karma Yoga, are beneficial in that they are like stepping stones on a ladder that can ultimately lead to the knowing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But one would have to come to the path of bhakti or bhakti yoga, such as in the 7th chapter, the very famous verse of this Jnana Yogi who is on the path of Jnana Yoga, Bahunam Janmanam Gnante Gnanavan Mam Prapadyante Vasudev Sarvam Iti Mahatma Sudurlaba. That after many, many births, he who's in knowledge finally comes to the realization that Vasudev is everything. And what is his response? He surrenders. Such a great soul, such a soul, is very rare. So he has come to the realization that the ultimate perfection on the spiritual path is Vasudev. It's a person. And he surrenders to then offer devotional service. And his path then begins from there. Bhakti or devotional service begins from there. And that is not a process that ends, as we are talking about Brahman realization in merger, but it's a process in which the identity of the devotee is retained. The devotee is in an eternal relationship with the Lord, that there will be then a relationship of eternal devotional service, where the devotee is eternally, even in the spiritual world, offering devotional service to the Lord. So that is the aspect of the personal realization to be distinguished from this impersonal realization. Because in impersonal realization, one of the effects is that through merger in the Mayavadi philosophy, living entity is losing identity. It is what Srila Prabhupada has said, spiritual suicide, going via that path of impersonal realization. Okay, I think we have time for one more word. Yes, another question. Please pass the microphone.
The second line of that mantra is saying, Tushyanti cha ramanti cha. That, you know, enjoying the transcendental bliss. I was wondering if you can give a little more explanation for that transcendental blessing.
Well, as we were talking about earlier, that these Mahatmas who have come to the realization that the Lord is everything are engaged in his devotional service. And they are in association with other devotees. They are enlightening them. They are enlightening them by conversing about Krishna. They are talking about Krishna's pastimes. And being engaged in that process, they are getting satisfied and they are conveying some bliss because Krishna's pastimes are very blissful. Additionally, the transcendental bliss comes from the process of devotional service itself. That being engaged in devotional service, They're carrying out the 9-part process of devotional service. They are hearing about the Lord. They are chanting his name. They're remembering him. They're worshiping him. In that name itself, in the hearing and chanting of the name, there is bliss. In conversing about the name, there is bliss. So the bliss is coming from the practice of devotional service. Okay, we'll go to the next verse, which is text 10, and that's on page 459. Tesam satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. Tesam, unto them, satata yuktanam, always engage, bhajatam, in rendering devotional service, priti purvakam, in loving ecstasy, dadami, I give, buddhi yogam, real intelligence, tam, that, yena, by which, mam, unto me, upayanti, come, they. Translation, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Please repeat. To those who are constantly devoted. To serving me with love. I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, we will once again have the devotees read paragraphs of the purpose. So let's start here. In this verse, please take the microphone.
In this verse, the word Buddhi Yogam is very significant. We may remember that in the second chapter, the Lord, instructing Arjuna, said that he has spoken to him of many things and that he would instruct him in the way of Buddhi Yoga. Now, Buddhi Yoga is explained. Buddhi Yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness, that is the highest intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence, and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness in devotional service, his action is called Buddhi Yoga. In other words, Buddhi Yoga is the process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world. The ultimate goal of progress is Krishna. People do not know this. Therefore, the associations of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. One should know that the goal is Krishna, and when the goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved.
Palimardhan Prabhu.
When a person knows the goal of life but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he is acting in Karma Yoga. When he knows that the goal is Krishna but he takes pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, he is acting in Jnana Yoga. And when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he is acting in Bhakti Yoga or Buddhi Yoga, which is the complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life.
A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he is still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of service. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to him.
So in this verse, Buddhi Yoga is discussed, and Krishna refers to the second chapter when he was instructing Arjun on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He says that I had mentioned about Buddhi Yoga being the highest form of yoga. In fact, in the second chapter, Krishna, in instructing Arjun, goes through a sequential process of knowledge, where first he conveys to him the analytical knowledge of the body and the soul. He tells him that you are not this body, you are the soul, and he describes the characteristics of what the soul is, that it's imperishable, it is eternal, it cannot be killed by any weapon, and the true identity of the living entity is that the living entity is the soul. And then he progresses further to talk about the occupation of the living entity as to what it is, and he goes through the various occupations. He goes through karma yoga, he goes through jnana yoga, and finally he comes to buddhi yoga being the highest platform, which is action in Krishna consciousness that he's talking about. And he's also pointing out that these various yogas that are there, karma yoga, jnana yoga, they are just rungs of the ladder, where the ultimate rung that is there is bhakti yoga, which would lead to the realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So since Pushya Krishna Prabhu is here, and he was delayed today on account of surgery, we should refer to him to tell us about what buddhi yoga really is.
Sometimes described as the four seed shlokas of Bhagavad Gita. Okay? So that means that they're very, 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 very vital to understand. And they're not, you know, talking about something extraneous, like, you know, Krishna is so liberal, is he not? You know, he'll say, you know, if you can't do this, then do this. If you can't do this, then do this. You know, the idea is that Krishna doesn't want you to leave his sphere of influence. He knows that the souls in this world are diseased. They're suffering from illusion. And so he's trying to keep us somehow or another within his sphere. So under his direction. Yes, Krishna said, I cannot do this, but I can do this. You understand? But these shlokas, these are different. These shlokas are the essential teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. So we started off here, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matas Sarvam Navartate. This is the first, the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. Who is Krishna? Why you should surrender to Krishna? You think he is like some ordinary person, maybe a little bit bigger person or something? Krishna is not like that. Who is Krishna? He is the origin of everything. Just like Bhagavatam Yasyataha Anvayadi Taratascha Tesha Vinyaswara. What is this topic of Bhagavatam? It is from where everything has come. You see, that is the topic of Bhagavatam. But the character of that being is very wonderful. And so finally we get some illumination into the Leela of Krishna. And we begin to understand that his internal personality is that he likes to enjoy. He likes to play with his bhaktas. That's his nature. And he likes to give ecstasy to his bhaktas and receive love and give love back and forth. This is the nature of God. So now, here, this same shloka, this Ahang Sarvasya Prabhu, now we understand. Now we come to this point. I am the source of everything. Everything coming from me. And then he's describing bhaktas. He's describing himself, and then he's describing bhaktas. My pure devotees dwell in me always. Their thoughts dwell in me. Their lives are dedicated and devoted to me. And they get great satisfaction and bliss enlightening one another and conversing about me. So now he has spoken about himself. And then he has spoken about the bhaktas. And then he is going to talk about his special mercy. Okay? The shloka you just read, Tesham Satata Yuktanam. Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. This Bhajatam, you know, Srila Prabhupada has defined what is Bhaja. Bhaja does not just mean worship, like, you know, you go to a church or a synagogue or a temple and you make your namaskar and worship like this. Bhaja, it means service. It means devotional service. And this is a very mysterious thing because, you know, Krishna starts off saying, hey, you're not the body. And then he's telling you, but engage this body in my service. You see? So what is this? You're not this body, but engage this body in my service rather than sitting somewhere and meditating, you know, in the super soul within the heart, which is a bona fide form of meditation. Krishna is saying, engage in my service, just like Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He's being engaged in service to Krishna as a warrior. So, first he talks about himself, then he talks about the character of the devotees, and now he's talking about the nature of that devotion. What is the nature of that devotion? Is it sometime I can take it or leave it devotion? No. Tesham satata. Satata means always, constantly, perpetually, eternally. Bhajatam priti purvakam. Engaging in activity and service with love, with priti. With love, engaging with service. Now he's describing the nature of bhakti. So he going like this. That's why these are the seed verses. First he's describing who he is. And then he's describing what is the nature of the bhakti. And then he's describing what is the nature of bhakti. And then what is the result of that bhakti? Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. Krishna, who is the Lord within our heart, who is our Cheta Guru, he from within and also with help, without giving us help, will give us the way to him. You will listen to him within your heart. You know the difference, is it not? Everyone knows the difference because every one of us is part and parcel of Krishna. Every one of us hears that voice of Krishna. And we also have the opportunity to reject or to accept that voice. You understand? You know what I mean. This is our opportunity in human life to connect with Krishna. And so we're not just saying you be obedient to Krishna because then you'll get mukti. That's irrelevant. You be obedient to Krishna so that your love will awaken. Then your Krishna consciousness will blossom. You will be more than qualified to enter into the spiritual world because of your Krishna consciousness. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. Krishna is saying, I will teach you. I will show you. I will give you the way how to come back to me. You understand? Now this next shloka. This is the fourth of the seed shlokas. We read this together, yeah? You have Bhagavad Gita?
Yes, they do.
Tesham evanu kamparatham aham agyana jamtamaha nashyami atma bhavasto jnana deepena vasvata.
Vasvata.
So this, Prabhu, anyone, Prabhu, you read this translation? Blessed, no blessings.
At the back there.
Hare Krishna. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance.
Let's analyze this beautiful fourth verse of the seed verses of Bhagavad Gita. So Srila Prabhupada, he describes here in his purport, Krishna is equal to everyone, is he not? In the sense that, Bhamai Bhamso Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, we're all his part and part. But for the bhakti, evanukam paratam, special, what is this?
I feel like, okay, I don't know how to use this thing, I've never used it before. Can I hold it like this?
A little awkward for me.
Hello.
Special mercy is there. Special mercy is there. In other words, Krishna is not like some type of machine, you know, like karmakanda. You know, you do something, you get some result. You understand? Krishna is a person, the supreme person, like you, like me, but very, very great. His mercy is unlimited. His compassion is unlimited. What was it? Yesterday, there was one ashram we have in Santa Cruz, the Chaitanya Saraswati Mat, and there was some program there. And one lady asking about mercy, this, that, and the other. And I afterwards I said to her, you know, hope against hope. is something to remember. And then she told me something. I learned so much from her. She said, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said, you know, when I heard that Krishna is everyone's friend, that was nice. But when I heard that he is Patita Pavana, he is the deliverer of the most fallen, that was very wonderful. You see? So Krishna is like that. Krishna, he wants to help us come home to him. He wants to save us and bring us home to him. So this is Anukampartam. Krishna is not neutral to the bhakta. He gives special, special mercy to each and every one of us. This is what he himself is saying. So Tesham Evanukampartam, and here is very important. Aham. Krishna is saying, Aham Agyana Jamtamaha Nashayami. Aham Nashayami means first person. I destroy it. I destroy Agyana. I destroy the ignorance. Jamtamaha, which is born of our ignorance, connection with this material energy through false ego. Krishna himself personally takes care of that. It is like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying that, you know, if you try to go beyond Maya, Maya Dyakshena, very, very difficult to go beyond Maya. But prapajante, those who surrender to me, they easily cross beyond. Why do they cross beyond? Not by their own power. They cross beyond because Krishna takes them across. Like this. Aham Nashayami Agyan. He destroys the ignorance. Jamtamaha, born of the mode of ignorance. And Gyana Deepena Basvata. He enlightens us from within. You see? Now, what is the next shloka? Now Arjuna is enlightened. Because Krishna and Arjuna, God and Bhakta has to get everything, is it not? Now Arjuna, with tears flowing from his eyes, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavam, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam, Adi Devam Ajam Vibhum.
Everyone, please move forward by about a few inches or so. That'd be fine.
So now, Arjuna realizes, you know, all of Arjuna's covered ignorance or lila, as the case may be, it is gone. Now Arjuna is enlightened with who is Krishna. You are Param Brahma. You're not my friend who I thought was, you know, one of my relatives through Queen Kunti and we're pals, and, you know, I asked you to drive my chariot because we're so close and you will give me advice. No, you are Param Brahma. You are the supreme abode, the supreme refuge, everything there in you. Like this. So these four seed verses, if we look at them kind of in a stepwise fashion, we can appreciate why they have become accepted like that. First, Krishna revealing himself, who I am. Ahang sarvasya prabhavo, mata sarvam pravartate. Everything coming from me. Nothing resting outside of me. Everything strung upon me like pearls on a thread. And who are the bhaktas? They're always relishing, associating and discussing about me. You see? And then, what is the nature of that bhakti? He gives. Then what is the result of that bhakti? The dami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayatate. He gives. And then, he describes, what is my special mercy? Because you are bhakta, I will give you personally enlightenment and take away the ignorance. These are the seed verses of Bhagavad Gita. You see? This is how Bhagavad Gita can be understood like that. And then Arjuna enlightened, he reveals to the world who is Krishna from his side, you see. Is that clear? Why seed verses are so vital? Very, very important verses. And you could say synopsis of whole Bhagavad Gita like that.
Since people are watching on the internet and they want your microphone.
Here?
Oh, my God. They should see Rakshit, not me. So let me ask you, any questions you have about this or any discussion or realization you have? Huh? We can share. Machchita madgata prana bodhyanta parasparam. Anyone?
Just one comment that an important point that came out from the last two verses is that if one is not yet at an advanced stage of devotional service, but one is sincere, then Krishna will help him from within to advance his devotional service. He says, yeah.
So what
that
is that?
Shine that lamp.
What is that sincere? What is that sincere? What do you think? Let's discuss that. What is that sincere?
Sincerity would mean that one has come to Krishna. Huh? He has come to the realization that Krishna, Vasudev, is everything. He may be bowing down before Krishna. He's worshipping him. He has come to the point of surrender. He may have even surrendered to him. And once he has come to that platform, Krishna says now, I will light the lamp that will take away the darkness of ignorance.
I will not forget you. That Krishna saying, promising like that. Well, you had something.
I was thinking that another point is that that sincerity is lack of, like, not lack, sorry, the opposite. How would you say the opposite of lack?
The opposite of sincerity is?
No, lack.
Lack of sincerity? What?
Anyways, he has a little bit of faith. And the soul starts following that faith. That faith starts growing. So that's sincerity. That's what attracts Krishna to a devotee. That he starts having faith.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think like this, at least in my mind coming to me, if just one time, you pray in your heart of hearts, my dear Lord, I am a fallen soul. I don't know what's best for me. You know what's best for me. I take shelter of your lotus feet. You please do whatever it takes for me to become your devotee, your servant, whatever it takes. Just one time, if we will approach Krishna with that hope and prayer, he can't run away from us anymore, because he sees that this person needs me, and I want them for that. Some humility came to that soul, and Krishna is so attracted by that. He's attracted by that humility. That's what I think, that some faith is there, but at some point, soul coming before Krishna, a bare soul, and saying, Krishna, you please give me your shelter. Then Krishna cannot forget. So each and every one of us, we can feel confident in Krishna's guardianship. One of the symptoms of surrender is Krishna will be our guardian. Now, you know, we may not be the best servitor. We may stray a little bit this way, a little bit that way, a little bit this way, a little bit that way. Because we are, you know, like we are attracted by some firefly instead of the sun. You think some firefly can stand before the sun. And like that, our, you know, intelligence is taken away from us. But here, if we remember these seed verses, who is Krishna? Aham Sarvasya Prabhu. Biggest problem is if, and this is really in the other commentaries of Bhagavad Gita, no one ever can understand this unless they are bhakta. They will say it's the unborn within Krishna. You see? It is not Krishna, it is the unborn within Krishna. Where Krishna ever says that? Where any self-realized soul ever says that? Never happened. Because the intention is they want to say that I am God and you are God, we are all God.
Therefore, because we are fallen souls, God has become patita? God has become fallen? When he is achyuta, infallible? Not possible. Therefore, we have to associate with Vaishnavas, bhaktas, to understand Krishna's instruction. And we have to associate only Krishna knowledge with them. Then we really will come to the right position of understanding who is Krishna and who we are. You know, when I first came in contact with Krishna consciousness, really I was a Mayavadi before I came in contact with Krishna consciousness. But Krishna is so kind that I saw devotees 3, 4, 5 times like this. Finally, when I had a chance to associate with devotees and learn about Krishna, it was like light bulbs going off. Yes, now I understand. I'm eternal individual soul. That I can understand. So then if I am eternal individual soul, God must be at least what I am and so much more. Why making him impersonal? You see? And then I could understand a little bit of Krishna consciousness like that. Really, it's all by the grace of the devotee. When I studied other Bhagavad Gita commentaries, like first I studied Prabhavananda Isherwood, and then I studied Penguin edition, English edition of Bhagavad Gita, and I think maybe one other edition before ever coming in contact with Bhagavad Gita as it is. It's like 1968, 69, like that. And finally coming in contact with Bhagavad Gita as it is 1970. You can see such difference. It is Bhagavad Gita or it is not Bhagavad Gita. Those editions are not Bhagavad Gita. You can't understand Krishna through them. I went up into the mountains in Boulder, Colorado when I was 18 years old. And I took Bhagavad Gita as it isn't. Really. And I hitchhiked up, and this man, he drove me up in his Jeep. He said, "Hey, walk along that stream." So I walked along that stream, and then there was a beautiful reservoir, and I didn't know how to backpack or anything. I just had a sleeping bag and a duffel bag. And I sat down. I had no food. So for 4 days, I just drank some water from the stream and read Bhagavad Gita as it isn't, and meditated. And then I came down from the mountains to Boulder, Colorado. And it was nighttime. That's where the University of Colorado was. And devotees were chanting in Boulder, Colorado. This was my second experience with devotees. First experience, I saw them chanting on the steps of University of California, Berkeley, here before. So when I came down to the street there, and I had no place to stay in Boulder, you know, so I saw them chanting. I saw one lady, really, you know, they didn't have saris back then. They had like sheets, I kid you not. So the men would wear orange sheets or yellow sheets if they were married or not married, and the women would wear orange sheets or yellow sheets. I mean, like made like saris, sheet. I'm sheet material. You know, like you make a sheet out of it. It really is true. So this one lady, she was chanting, they were chanting holy name. There were only 2, 3 of the devotees out there. And she was going, "Haribo, Haribo, Haribo." And I thought, whoa, I must be ecstatic. You know? So I saw Nittai. Nittai Das was distributing incense. And maybe he had Back to Godhead magazine. I don't even think he had Back to Godhead magazine. And I asked him, "Can I maybe put my sleeping bag down at your temple? I have no place to sleep." And he said, "Wait a minute. Let me go check with the temple president." So he walked over. I didn't watch him. I was watching her chanting. And then he comes back and he says, "He said that if you're interested in learning about Krishna, then you can stay." I had been reading the Bhagavad Gita. I had no idea that the Bhagavad Gita was about Krishna. I had no idea at all that the Bhagavad Gita was about Krishna. This edition I'm reading. I'm telling you. And I said, "No, I don't want to learn about Krishna."
So I didn't stay there that night. But I'm telling you, you can study the Bhagavad Gita as it isn't, and you have no idea it's about Krishna. Really. So you can understand how merciful Mahaprabhu has been to all of us to give us, either directly or through his books, the association of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's followers. We are so, so very fortunate. Prabhu?
Yeah, I was just thinking when you were explaining that you were reading the Bhagavad Gita isn't, but still Krishna heard your prayers in a right way. That's the most amazing thing through this, that he sent the devotee right there when you got down.
I'm meditating, merging through the light. No, I think Krishna is very, very kind, really.
We can see the clear evidence.
Actually, so kind. But really, it is such a relief to have this Bhagavad Gita knowledge and devotional service knowledge. It is like, you know, as Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say, is like you have so many zeros in life. Without the one before those zeros, they're just zero. And you analyze, you have knowledge now. All of you have knowledge now. You analyze life. And without Krishna, it is zero. You know, all the wealth you can accumulate, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, bless you. All the wealth you can accumulate, what value does it have? You see? Has no value. And all you say, I will accumulate wealth and I will be able to give it to my children. What is that? What goal is that in life? And then you become known as a religious man or woman. What value is that? Who cares? Dharma, artha, kama. You can enjoy something. You can squeeze some pleasure out of the senses. But you look, I mean, I treat old people all the time. I just came from surgery doing a hip fracture on an old person. What value? There's so much suffering involved in life. You're young. You think, I will never grow old. Oh, you wait and see. We who are older, getting old, you will see. Really, I can remember, just like we can all remember, when we were little children. What happened to that? What happened to that little child body? Gone. But we're not gone. And then old age body will come. And still we are thinking, I will still go on and on and on. Not possible. You see, if nothing else, death will make us sober. It will sober us to realize that there is an end to this madness. Let me find some way to make sense out of my life. Not to waste it all. Vain pursuits. You see? So anyway, like that. So next time I saw the devotees, it was 1969. And Washington, D.C., November 15th. And it was the 1 million person march against the Vietnam War. So really there were 1 million people, maybe more, marching in the streets of Washington. Mostly young people, older people, everyone. Wanting the war to stop. And I, walking down the street, what do we want? Peace. When do we want it? Now, you know, like this. And then one devotee came down the street. And he was very bright-faced, and he was wearing peach-colored sheets. And he asked me, do you have a donation? And I took his hand, and I'm a crazy man, right? So I kissed the back of his hand. And he went off. He looked at me and said, and then he went off. Okay, so that night, my friend Marty, who later became Raghavendu, he was kind of a revolutionary type, you know, back in those days. He said, let's go to the Chinese embassy. They're going to have a rally there. So this nighttime on November 15th. So I said, okay. We drove to the Chinese embassy, and we get out of the car, and there's tear gas coming down the street. I've been tear gassed once before in Berkeley, California. I did not like tear gas. So we see this cloud of tear gas coming down the street. So we turn down the street to run. And we run down the street, and what street is it? A slew of devotees, about 30 devotees coming down the street with banners, just coming back from Sankirtan in the evening and walking up into their temple in the middle of a block. That's where we were. So we walked up into the temple. First time I ever went into a temple. And devotees were very bright-faced. And I thought, yeah, this is very sincere people. They must, you know, very. And then they said, sit down, take some prasadam. So we sat down on the floor, no mats, nothing. And they tear a piece of wax paper, no plates. And their prasadam they're distributing is, it's a mixture of, you know that, like Rice Krispies and raisins and maybe a little salt and some other thing in there, you know. And I'm eating this and I'm thinking, oh, these people are really austere. They don't eat very much. That was the first prasadam I took. And really, that was my third encounter with devotees. The fourth encounter, I became a devotee. But this, you know, this way of, you know, somehow or another, being introduced to Krishna consciousness is not because we may be qualified, but somehow is by Krishna's special mercy, evanukampartam, because we are wretched, fallen souls, you know, but we have become so blessed and fortunate by the association of devotees. That's all we can say. Because of that mercy of Krishna giving us the association of devotees. So now we know what is the key. We know Krishna ahang sarvasya prabhavo. He is the source of everything. Everything is resting in him. And then we know, machchita madgata prana, that Krishna, his devotees, they love to relish discussing about him, talking about him, hearing about him, serving him. And then we know that Krishna is within our heart. He will give us guidance, how to serve him better, how to take shelter of him. He will not neglect us. Srila Prabhupada, in that purport when I walked in your reading, is even if we are not fully dedicated, if just once we had some dedication, then Krishna will not abandon us. This is Krishna's personality. This is Krishna's character. You want to know something about Krishna? That is what Krishna is like. He is not like, you know, sometimes the Christians, they say, God is a jealous God. You know, you hear about that. This is not Krishna. Krishna is a merciful God. You see, he is full of mercy, full of karuna. That's his nature. He will not reject us if we have come to him. He will take so many steps toward us when we have taken tiny step toward him, like this. And then result is that through our good fortune, Krishna will reveal himself more and more to us as he has revealed himself to Arjuna, like this. Anyone have any comment? Yes.
I was thinking of this verse when Prabhu asked the question about how you are still reading the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna still gave you the mercy. I mean, the Gita that was not...
Yeah, something or other.
Yeah. I was thinking of a verse and I found it. It's chapter 7, verse 16, where Krishna says, O best among the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotion service unto me. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who's searching for knowledge of the Absolute. So.
Yeah, no, something important about that shloka is that we never come to Krishna, yes, Krishna, I want to love you, I'm coming to you. We come with some other, you know, motivation. You know, we have some other interest. But we come to Krishna. This is Sukriti, piety. The whole Vedic system is designed for us ultimately to come to Krishna. But what's beautiful about the Vedic system is that even if someone doesn't come to Krishna and they come to, let's say, a demigod, desirous of some material benefit, then still there's at least recognition of higher authority. You understand? This is still within the Vedic system that recognize a higher authority. Whereas, you know, you can say to some extent, you know, Western materialism, people think, I can get anything I want. I don't need any prayer or authority. I just go get it. That's demoniac mentality. Because one is not accepting that there's a higher authority. You understand? Even I may have the qualifications to get it. Still, it doesn't mean that we will get it. And even if we do get it, if we don't recognize a higher authority, then that's demoniac mentality. You see? Outside of the Vedic fold. So the whole Vedic culture is designed in this way to gradually bring us to understand, just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that those who worship the demigods, I give them the resolution, the determination to do that. But they do not know that what they may be getting, it is actually coming by me. In other words, Krishna is the benefactor, not the demigod. You see? But this is how Vedic culture is designed, like that. People sometimes, they wonder, well, what is all these Vedic hymns? You know, why they are there? They are there for that purpose. That if you have some material desire, then you at least recognize there's a higher authority. Not that you think I can do this independently. Because independent mentality is demoniac mentality. It is complete illusion. You follow? So your friends may ask you about that. Now you have a way to address it. Like that. Someone may say, well, why are there so many religions in the world? How you will answer? Anyone. You have a different way, I have a different way. How you will answer? Go ahead.
Well, there are different, you know, the religion is two types. One is Naimitika and another is Sanatana. So the basic religion, whenever we see there are varieties, is Naimitika, which is related to the body. Means without a philosophy or without religion, people cannot act. Just like if you see when the Mexican acts, like how 150 people with the best of blind beliefs and religions, they occupy the land of the Spanish. So similarly, in varieties of religions which is coming up from the Naimitika Dharma. But there is one religion which is Sanatana Dharma. And that exists. That exists without any adulteration.
So let me give you another way to look. That's true. What you say is absolutely true. Let me give you, and this is coming like from Srila Prabhupada as he was about to pass on. He was mentioning this shloka many, many times. First thing is, you know that the divisions of faith described in Bhagavad Gita. Divisions of faith, so there is mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance, and some combination, permutation of these modes creates, you know, activity, and also creates different type of faith. You see? So that's one way of looking at why there are so many religions. But this is from Bhagavad Gita 13th chapter. First of all, Krishna says this 13th chapter, 21st verse. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects. And nature is, of course, working under Krishna. Whereas the living entity is the cause of various sufferings and enjoyments in the world. So we create our own enjoyment and suffering based on our attachments. Okay, but it's the next verse. It's this verse here. Karanam Guna Sangasya. So many times Srila Prabhupada quoting this shloka. That's the second part of the shloka. Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunte Prakriti Jan Gunan. Karanam Guna Sangasya Sarasat Joni Janmasu. So this verse, and this verse very much towards Srila Prabhupada's final days, he was quoting this verse again and again. The living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature, and thus he meets with good and evil amongst various species. So in this way, the jiva soul, who is deluded, forgetful, they have to come under the influence of the three modes of material nature. No other place, no other way, no other mode of action that they can possibly conceive of. They're captive. They're prisoners of that. You see? So only way to reconcile all of this is through devotional service. Devotional service is not of this world. Devotional service is of the spiritual world. Devotional service is transcendental. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochate Nakangshate Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Bhakti is obtained after Brahma Bhuta. Bhakti is obtained after liberation, self-realization, not before. And so any act, knowingly or unknowingly, that we do in devotional service, it is transcendental, especially if it is done with love. And this is the nature of bhakti. So how, even though we are not this body, even though we have no place in this world, really, Krishna is still encouraging us to engage our senses in his service. This means that there is no distinction for Krishna between matter and spirit. There is no distinction for Krishna between matter and spirit. Everything based on the quality of consciousness. If one is in Krishna consciousness in this world, they are considered liberated. And it does not matter that they have the form of human being or whatever. If they are engaged in devotional service, they are considered to be liberated. Tandara Bhaktasanevas Janame Janame Hoye Abhilash. In this way, we hear the prayers of the Vaishnavas. Birth after birth, just give me your service. Not even desiring liberation. Just birth after birth, give me your service. Not that Krishna will give you birth after birth. He will take you home. But the men, just give me service. Give me your connection. I don't care for anything else. If I forget you, then I am lost. And what place do I have in Vaikuntha or Goloka if I have no loving service for you? So this mentality is like that. So we'll call back. So the main thing is these four shlokas, they build upon the aspects of reality that we want to embrace and that understanding. Very, very helpful to understand and meditate on the seed verses for that reason. Anything else? Now time is
up. Thank you very much, Pushya Krishna Prabhu.
I'm sorry I was late. My operation was supposed to start at 2 o'clock, but I had to follow a very slow.
Well, we are pleased that you were able to make it and give us this discussion of the four verses. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna.